interview will be in front of 200 people, and sometimes it's a step-by-step to get there. Believe me, I did not start by teaching in front of a lot of people. I do have to tell you my first teaching experience. I'll never forget this. So first of all, I became Frohm in my 20s, and about 2 years into it, I met my husband. He was a rabbi at Ish HaTorah, and we got married, and we got moved to Israel forever. 4.5 months into forever, Ish HaTorah Toronto wanted us to come back. And so we made a 3-year commitment to Ish. Toronto, we were there for 13 years. So I remember the first time I ever, for the first person I ever learned with, I remember they called me up from Ish, and they said, I had a little baby, Shoshana, and they called me up, they go, we have a learning partner for you. And I go, oh good, there's so much I need to know. And they go, no, you're the teacher. I'm like, no, I don't know anything. They'll go, no, you'll be fine. So this girl walked in. Her name is Rhonda, you know Rhonda Halpern? So her name is Rhonda. She walked in, okay, wearing very cool jeans, and she was a feminist studies major at York University. This is my first learning partner. I'm like, okay! So, I'll never forget, like, really, I had this baby, and I remember, like, Shoshana would only go to sleep when she was a high-need baby and a high-need teenager, and she would only go to sleep if she was, like, in the stroller, in the house, over a bump, like in the linoleum, like, boop, 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 boop. This is our first one, you do all these stupid things. So I remember I was learning with Rhonda like this the whole time. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, Rhonda became Frohm, and you know, I can't tell you what nachas I get from her. So that was my first learning experience. My first teaching in front of everybody experience, I'll never forget. They called me up from Ish HaTorah Toronto. Again, I've only been Frohm for a couple of years. They called me up, and they said, okay, we're having this big love, dating, and marriage day for singles, and we just can't be rabbi. We feel there should be a woman to get up and speak, and we want you to speak, but just a workshop, like a little work, not the keynote, that everybody's going to break up into groups. The most people you're going to have in the workshop is like 20 people, 15, 20 people. And I was like, I was so nervous, I didn't know if I could do it. And they said, you could do it, fine. So I spent, like, I'm telling you, my jaw hurt from grinding my teeth, all right? Like, I was so nervous, and I put together this whole workshop, and I was so nervous. So I went, I'll never forget. So I called the workshop, I created this dating workshop called Jewish View on Love, Dating, and Marriage, How to Find the Right One. So the workshops, they had the keynote, and the workshops, all the other workshops had such boring titles, you could die, okay? Like medieval Jewish history and Spanish Inquisition, I'm telling you. Like, and I was like, Love, Dating, and Marriage, How to Find the Right One, it's a bunch of singles. So everybody came to my workshop. There were 200 people there, and they had to switch the workshop from a little costume to the big room. And the rabbi who convinced me to do this, who told me 15 people, 20 tops, is at the back, and I'm like this. I was so like, so Baruch Hashem, I taught the workshop, and I created the workshop because a lot of it is they're actually working. I'm not speaking, right, because it's a workshop, because I was so nervous to speak. So they, and in the end, it was a very positive experience. And I taught, then I was, whenever they did a Judaism 101 series, it was like one of the weeks would be Lori doing Love, Dating, and Marriage. I taught this dating workshop to death, to the point where I was so bored of teaching the same thing that I started teaching other things. And I shelved that dating workshop for years because I was so sick of it. And I resurrected it a few years ago, and I was like, this is good stuff. And I started teaching it again. So that was my first experience. So we're going to go over again how to prepare a class a little bit and things that block us, to unblock you. So first, number one, know your goals. I have 4 goals in every class, no matter what I'm teaching, no matter where I'm teaching. I have 4 main goals. Number one, they should like me. Not me personally. They may never even see me again. They should like me because for a lot of these people, you're the first Orthodox woman they've ever met, maybe the first Orthodox person you've ever met. And if they like me, then they will be open to what I'm about to say. And also, a lot of what you do is just blowing their misconceptions. They really, I don't know about you, my husband always says, we love having negative guests. With like guests who are coming, like the parents of somebody who's becoming Frohm, and they're like negative. My husband loves negative guests. Why? Because you can only be better than they think than they thought you were going to be. Okay, the only way to go is up from them, as opposed to people with high expectations, and you could disappoint them. So they're really expecting that I'm speaking Yiddish and I weigh 300 pounds and I have chunky shoes. Like, really, they're expecting the worst. So when they find out you're normal and you're funny and like you kind of look like them as much as possible, So then it blows, a lot of it's just a lot of times, like for the first 10 minutes, they're just like this. Like, they just look surprised because you're not what they expected, all right? You're funny, you're normal, you're all these things. So number one is they should like you, all right? So they should like me. Number two, they should be blown away by the unbelievable wisdom of the Torah. If I wish I had a daughter, I'm sure you've had it, for every time somebody said to me, why didn't they ever teach me this in Hebrew school? Nobody ever told me this. I went to day school and I never heard this, all right? So they should be blown away, like, wow, wisdom of the Torah. Number three, you should leave them wanting more. Throughout every class, I always say, oh, but that's another class. Right? Like I'll mention something like, oh, yeah, then marriage, but that's another class. So you leave them wanting more. You're just giving them a taste. There's so much more. Number four, they should leave the class and they should immediately be able to apply something into their life. They should see that it's Torah's Chaim, it's instructions for living. This will improve your life. This will enhance your life. And that will lead them to want more as well. Okay, so you got the four things? All right. The fourth was they should immediately be able to apply it in their life. Practical, all right? They should like me, blown away by the wisdom of the Torah, leave them wanting more, and they should be able to apply it to their life. Okay? That in every class, no matter what I'm teaching, no matter where I'm teaching, those are my four goals in the class. Sometimes I get the bottom three, and they didn't really like me so much. No. Okay. You have to know that, too. You're not everybody's teacher. Not everybody's going to like me, and not every teacher. You can't take it personally. You really can't. Why should you take it personally? They don't know you. But a lot of times, again, they've got their own issues and stuff is going on, so you're not the best. I know a lot of you are out there alone, but if you're out there as a team, like the Outreach Colos really have it down because you're a team. So they don't relate to you, they might relate to somebody else, all right? So you're not everybody's teacher. All right, another point in teaching, you should pick a topic that you like. Like when people say, well, what should I start teaching? What should I do? Something you enjoy. If you get pleasure from it and you enjoy it and it's real to you, then they'll get it. Don't pick something that's hard for you, something that you don't really like halacha, but like I think I should teach the laws of Shabbos. No, teach something you like. You like Perkei Avos, do Perkei Avos, Moser, whatever. Pick something that you like. And that'll also help you research. Because if you're interested in this topic, then it'll be easy to research because you'll get pleasure from it. Next point. When you're teaching, ideally, you do not want to script it. I have to tell you, my daughter, Brachaleia, she's the archive. She's my 14-year-old. She's the archivist of the family. She goes into our garage with all these like crazy boxes from all these places we've lived and swapping around, and she's archiving everything. She's finding amazing photos, and she's taken all my old classes, and she's like put it together. It's unbelievable. She's great. So she found one of the first public talks I ever gave in Toronto. It wasn't the dating workshop. I was asked to speak at a conservative synagogue about a topic, and I literally wrote out every word. Thank you so much for inviting me here. Okay, everything, okay? Like every word I wrote out, okay? So that's how I began. After a while, the more you teach, the better you get at it, and now I can teach most of my classes without notes, but don't think that's the goal. So I got to the point where I stopped writing every word, and I just put points, right? You'll put them on cards, whatever you want, points. So again, you look at it, you glance down, you see the point, and you say it, all right? Like, and if you have to at the beginning, so write out every word that gives you more confidence. You're going to gain confidence. This is definitely a skill that the more you do it, the better you become. You see that with cooking, you see that with aerobics. What?
Do you still get nervous?
Yes, so I'm going to talk about that. So nervous, it's good to be a little nervous. Do you ever hear a speaker who's not nervous at all, they're so laid back? It's like, there's no energy there.
Okay.
It's good. Don't be so nervous that you are like frozen, and you want to be nervous enough that there's like an energy. Everybody's nervous. Yes?
What was the name of this heading?
Oh, this heading? Points, not script. Okay? Right? You should have points, but don't try not to script yourself. Yeah?
When I first, I was, whatever, in Kiruv training, and Rebetzin Begi came to teach us, she said, just write 10 points out. And just teach them, just to like just one little note, and then and then you'll whatever. And Rebetzin Begi has become such an amazing speaker that she was reading point one, point two, point three, 20 years ago when she taught us.
Yeah.
So 20. Yes, 22 years ago. So anyway, but she has become she's developed into .
Okay. I have tricks that help me to remember the class and help the people to remember the wisdom. I use a lot of acronyms, a lot, especially because I teach on Shabbos and Yontif and stuff, so they can't write it down. So I have acronyms, right? The four things you never knew about Judaism, Jack P. Can't judge another person. It's not all or nothing. It's better to know than not to do than not to know, and we're created for pleasure. The four steps of tshuva, RSVP, switch the first two letters. S, stop. R, regret. V, verbalize. P, make a plan. Got it? Right? I have acronyms for everything. Why? So I can remember it, and they can remember it, and they can access it. All right. So whatever you need to do, do it in a way so that, and again, it flows better. All right. So here's how it goes in a class. You have an idea that my husband always says, what's your goal in the class? What do you want them to walk away with? You should be able to sum it up. But in the class, I want them to know, right, not 20,000 different things or facts or figures, one goal. All right? So for example, Let's say in the class, I want them to know that they're not just a body but a soul. That's my goal. So first, state it. Right? You're not just a body, but you're a soul. Okay? Say exactly what you want them to get. Then make it real. What do I mean? So I'll say you're not just a body, but a soul. So how do I make it real? I say if you're standing in Times Square and you're doing a survey and you're asking people, are you a body or are you a body and a soul? Most people would say, of course I'm not just a body. Of course I'm a soul. But how many people are real with that? That's a whole different story. Got it? State it. Then make it real, right? The Times Square survey, but it's like, yeah, of course I'm not just a body, but I'm a soul. Then make it personal. You don't have to tell them personal things about your life you don't want to share with them, but when you make a when you use a personal story, they feel close to you, especially with women, all right? They feel close to you and they can relate to you. So here's my, body and soul, I'll say, listen, my husband's a rabbi, but do you think I wake up in the morning, I'm a soul, I go floating through my day? No, I'm tired, you have to be able to do that, you go to the bathroom, and then you eat, and you do a carpool, and then you're tired. So it's a very body world. We can forget we're souls. You see, I make a little personal story, like, oh, she's like me. She gets tired, she gets hungry, she goes to the bathroom. Okay. Then bring God into it, okay? All my classes are about God. By the end, my whole thing with everybody is have a personal relationship with the Almighty. If you give them that in whatever series you're giving or whatever class you're giving, that's it. That'll lead for them to become from. If they don't have a personal relationship with Hashem, it doesn't matter how warm and fuzzy something is, no matter how intellectually deep it is, no matter how inspiring it is, they're not going to become from. All right? You have to give them Hashem. And don't be afraid to do it either. And since you're a rabbi's wife, most of you, it's like you're allowed to talk about God. So bring God into it. So I say to them, right, I say, we can forget we're souls. I said, but God has a way of reminding us, doesn't he, that we're not just bodies, but we're souls. We have experiences in our life that are soul awakening experiences, where God, something happens in your life, and it lifts you out of this world. Got it? All right? So bring God into it. Then I ask them, I want to draw them in, what are those times? Tell me those times you remember you're not just a body. What are those soul awakening experiences you have? People go, I'll have a baby, falling in love, wedding, funerals. Okay, you get it to come from them. So now, you see how it's building? Right? You have the idea, and you're going step by step, and now they're with you. Then you get them to see it. I said, when you look into the eyes of someone you love, what are you thinking? Smart monkey who evolves so beautifully? Right? Great gene pool? No. When you look at the eyes of somebody you love, it's a soul connection. You have a soul connection with them. You see their soul. And everybody's like, yeah, got it? You have to bring them there. All right? So you see I use humor a lot. I'm very bad at telling jokes. My kids are like, I am the worst joke teller. If I have to say, like, okay, there was a priest and a rabbi and a minister. No, hold on. Like, I can't tell a joke, but I think I am funny. Like, you don't be afraid to bring humor into it, and they're not expecting you to be funny, so that it disarms them a little bit. Okay, you got it? All right, sources, right? So then you give them a Torah source. So it says in Kabbalah, before you're born, you're one soul, and God splits you. You're half a soul, you go off into this world, and your other half, your zivug, or your ultimate soulmate, also goes off into this world. Okay? So give them a Torah source to all the stuff you just said. Then give them an outside source. Because I talked to them, I said, you know, when does a baby get its soul, according to Kabbalah? That 40 days after conception. And it says, somebody showed me in a medical journal, that a baby is, in utero, is outwardly gender neutral until approximately 40 days after conception. So either quote a New York Times article or Freud or whoever, but bring in an outside source. You got the Torah source, then you have the outside source. Statistics say, I just read an article, right? Got it? To back you up. All right. And then state it again, all right? You're not just a body, but a soul. You just keep driving it home through all these steps. No matter what idea you have, that's how you teach. That's how you teach. All right. So again, nervous. I said a little nervous is good. How can you avoid being too nervous and paralyze yourself? Know your audience. If you know who you're speaking to, what's wrong? Drink. Oh, yeah, takes the edge off, okay? Sometimes I'm at a dinner. It's actually not good. If I'm at a dinner and I'm speaking up through dinner, and if I have even a little bit of wine, I get a little too disarmed, okay? So know your audience. If you know who you're talking to, it's going to be much, much, much easier to be less nervous because I have a sense of who I'm talking to. So if it's one-on-one, I have something on H.com that you can listen to on H Audio. It's called Discovering the Real You. It's about different drives and personality types. This will help you in every aspect of your life, definitely in your work. because you have to know who's in front of you. Some people are more intellectual. Some people are more emotional. Some people are doers. Do you understand? So you have to be able to spin the material for them. Now, that's if one-on-one. If it's in a group audience situation, so again, who am I dealing with? So normally I go in, okay, so it's all college kids. It's Yale, okay, they're smarty pants, okay, I know who I'm dealing with. So, but sometimes, or they're all secular, or it's couples, or it's women, whatever. Sometimes, I remember going to one city once, that shall be named, that I will not name, and they told me it's going to be all secular people, right? So I, in my mind, like, I'm going material in this. So, like, so some secular people walked in, and then people with black hats walked in, and people with shadows walked in. So now I got, like, a whole, and it's very different. So know your audience, but know your target. So if that happens to you, and people walk in who you weren't expecting, you're not, I'm not teaching for the from people. I don't want to offend them, but my target and everything I say and the lesson that I use is totally geared. Don't get insecure and have to use, like, from lesson because you want the from people to know that you really are from, okay? You are targeting, I'm telling you, you're speaking to the secular people. Believe me, the from people will be totally inspired, but you're not talking for them. Right? Don't get sucked into that. Right? Their kids will still marry your kids. Don't worry. All right. Hopefully. Bless you. Okay. Know your material. To be less nervous, know your material. The more you teach it again and again and again, the more accessible it is. I'm telling you, there are talks that you could just say, Lori, do this, and I could literally get up and do it. Now, it's because I've given it again and again, the dating workshop. So start with one thing, give it again and again. You'll be less nervous if you're confident in the material. Realize that it's normal to have a fear of public speaking. In all the fears listed in the world, it is the number one fear, more than fear of flying, okay? More than fear. It says it's greater than fear of death. And as Seinfeld says, that means you'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy, okay? It's normal to be nervous. It's the number one fear, right? Fear of public speaking. Another fear that we have and what makes us nervous is, what if they ask me a question and I don't know the answer? Do you know what the Talmud says you're supposed to say? I don't know. The Talmud says, teach your lips. My husband taught me this early on. Teach your lips to say the words, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to find out and I'm going to get back to you. It's okay to say, I don't know. If you knew everything, then there isn't much to it. All right, next point. If you forget, well, it's like, what if I forget to say something, right? What if I they didn't know. You know, the worst thing to do, you know, when you're entertaining with food is to be apologetic. Oh, what's it supposed to come out this way? They don't know how it's supposed to come out, right? Whatever you do is what you do. So don't get apologetic about your clothes or about your food, and don't be apologetic about your talk. If you left something out, they didn't know it was supposed to be in. It's okay. Okay? It's okay. A lot of them also, it's like, well, a lot of people don't want to teach because they're like, oh, I don't know it, but like, I don't know enough. You know so much more. I don't have to tell you. You know. You know so much more than they do. They know nothing. Right? You know so much more. And if you know it, again, not only should you teach, you have a responsibility to share it. Also realize you have a little humility. You have a great product here. Okay? This is the Torah. This is truth. You have to be really bad to blow it, okay? There are people who blow it, but generally, rely on the fact, I used to work in advertising, I worked for Leo Burnett, and I always say I'm still in advertising, I just have a much better product now. This is truth, right? You've got a lot going for you. Next point, be you. When I first started preparing to teach, I would listen to Revitz and Heller tapes, and I listened to Revitz and Tursky tapes, and I would try to be them, and it was a disaster, okay, disaster. Be you. Make it your own. Listen to tapes and read books and listen to Sherman and everything and put it together, but be you. Use your own style, your own personality, your own stories, your own history. Make it your own. It's very, very important. Don't try to be someone else. Disaster. If a point is not real to you, like if you're not confident in understanding it, don't say it. Even if it's supposed to be in the class, even if you heard it on the shiur, even if your husband explained it to you 10 times, but if you still don't get it, don't say it. I'm telling you, if you say something, even if you say it with confidence, they know when it's not real to you and they go for the throat, okay? They will. They'll know the one point that you're really not confident in, and that's the one they'll zero in on. Don't say it. Also realize that God runs the world. I ask Hashem before I get up every talk I give, Hashem, please, Give me the right words. Give me the right thoughts. Give me the right actions. It should be a Kiddush Hashem. All right? Help me. There are times, and I'm sure a lot of teachers here, it happens to you, where somebody will ask a question. You know, after I have a question. They'll ask a question, and you'll come out with the most unbelievably inspiring, eloquent answer. Like that is funny and inspiring and deep and to the point and dramatic. And if somebody would have asked me before the talk, what if somebody asked this? I would have gone, oh my gosh, I would never know how to answer that question. Hashem will give you the right words. It's unbelievable. It happens in my writing. It definitely happens in my speaking. You are a kli, okay? You are a flower, but you are a vessel. Have humility. Hashem is just using you to share his Torah, all right? So don't think it's you. Ask Hashem to help you. Okay, blocks that we have. Number one, I don't have the personality. So I'm telling you, some of the greatest speakers and educators in the world are shy and are introverts. Rabbi Noach Weinberg Zatzal, if you ever saw his handwriting, you know anything about handwriting analysis, tiny, tiny handwriting. He was an introvert. An introvert. Rabbi Noach. Right? You would never see him like flitting around at parties, talking to a bunch of people. He was always like having a deep conversation one-on-one in the corner. He was an introvert. My husband is an introvert. He's an introvert. So he's a fantastic, fantastic teacher and speaker. Because when he gets up, the first time, so funny, I dated him. He was like kind of shy. He's until he's deep. He's sensitive. All these things. Why we got engaged. And then he came to Toronto. Remember, it was Shabuos time. And he taught. They had all night learning at Aish. And it was the first time I ever saw him teach. He got up there. I couldn't believe it. Like, who was this guy? He was funny, and he was exciting. And that, because for your job and for what you need to do, it's amazing. Hashem will give you certain talents and koach that you didn't even know you had. So you don't have to be a certain personality in order to be a teacher. Another block we have is I don't have the time. If you want to teach, Hashem will give you the time. You could do good things with your time. Hashem, I don't know about you, Hashem expands time. Friday, crazy day, right? Erev Shabbos, crazy, crazy. Every time there's an Erev Shabbos where I'm cooking for somebody else or doing a kindness for somebody else, I'm finished early. But if I'm not doing that, or I'm doing stupid things in my time, and watching like a show on the internet while I'm doing it, okay, right? It's like a disaster. Hashem will expand time for you if you want to make the time for Hashem's children. He will expand time for you, clearly. Another block, I don't know enough. I don't know enough. You don't have to know everything in order to teach. If you had to know everything in order to teach, no one would teach. No one knows everything. The biggest block that we have is I don't have the classes. What do I teach? I don't have the classes. So you have to know that there is so much resource out there now, much more so that we started 23 years ago when we got married and they threw us out, okay, into the branch. There was no teacher training. There was nothing. Now they have a whole teacher training program, and there was no Nerla Elef. There was no H-Wives, like Nishay H. There was nothing. Go out there, you'll figure it out. So now there is so much. There is a lot of training. There are people to help you. There are so much. There's so many resources, so many things in English. There's so much stuff is accessible now. Like, just go into H Audio. It's all there. You get my book, Remember My Soul, which is about mourning, but you learn 5 minutes a day in memory of the person for 30 days. There's 30 classes in there. You have 30 classes in there. You just put in your own stories and make it your own. There is so, and I have to tell you, my husband, bless him, spent the first years of our marriage investing in teaching me how to teach in material. He went through, there's a Perkei Avos series called The 48 Ways to Wisdom. It's a fantastic series, and it's very much, it's what can I say? It's showing them Torah's Chaim, showing them that Torah wisdom for self-growth and how it applies. It's the greatest self-growth series for myself and for my students. And it takes 2.5 years to go through the series. You want material? And the material's there. I have notes. I am now giving them on Project Sinai. So you can go onto the archives, and everyone is there. I know people, other Rebbetzins who are teaching, they watch my class, they make it their own, and they teach it over. All the material's there. All the handouts are there. It's all there. It's all there for you. My husband taught me every one of the 48 ways. ProjectSinai.org has live internet classes now and archives everything. My dating workshop is on there. It's a 3-part dating workshop. You can teach it or you can send people onto it.
The famous dating workshop?
The famous dating workshop that Baruch Hashem, I hope to keep teaching again and again because I tell them, just go into Project Sinai. Okay, it's fantastic. I teach live classes. I'm going to be teaching a live class on Tuesday night, tomorrow night when I get back, one of the 48 ways. So we're going through the whole 48 ways. I also have a Tariq Mitzvah class. My husband taught me every one of the 48 ways from his original notes that he learned from Reb Noach. It was like the Dead Sea Scrolls, I'm telling you, like piecing them together. He taught me every one of the Tariq Mitzvahs, every one. He taught me, he went through the whole, every parsha with me. He invested in me. Not only did it bring us closer together, but he would say to me, okay, here's the point. I don't know how to say this to girls, but you know how to spin it for girls, okay? So I would get the point, and then I would make it my own. And I'm telling you, once you have the material to, the first time, when you first start teaching, it is time, okay? This, you have to put a lot of time into preparing it, but once you prepare the class, you just keep going back to that class. You don't have to keep re-preparing it. So if you keep notes and you you're organized, then it really you have it at your fingertips. So by the first couple of years, you are investing. But use other people's classes. There's something called Aish Inside that anybody in Kiruv is allowed to go into. If you contact Aish Torah, it's called Aish Inside. Only you have to have a password, but you can go inside. It's not Aish.com. It's Aish Inside. And Aish Inside is a lot of stuff, not only how to market your material, how to set up a branch, but there's classes and classes and classes in there. A lot of materials there, and it's there for you to use. You just contact Aish. Just contact Aish Torah and in Jerusalem and tell them that you work for this organization, this Kiruv, and can you access Aish Inside? They let you access it. Pardon? Yeah, for the pastor. If you go to aishinside.com, you can contact them and they'll give it to you. Oh, so just go to aishinside.com and then they'll have a process where you can do it. Okay, now presentation. It's great to have a lot of material, but as you know, and I'm sure you've been to Shirim, where the person has a tremendous amount of material, but if it's not presented in an exciting way or an inspiring way, you might as well, it's almost negative, all right? So here I'm going to give you basic do's and don'ts when presenting. So ideally you want nothing in between you and the audience. There are many, many speakers, excellent speakers, who literally are afraid to have nothing between them and the audience. They need this. They don't have any notes, but they need something to hide behind, okay? And then they do this, right? Okay, so they're hiding behind this thing, and they're afraid to let go of it, or they're going to disappear or something. So I remember once we had a speaker, we brought in a speaker, and he goes, well, where's the shtender? I go, well, we don't have it. It was at somebody's house. I go, there's no shtender. So he's like, he's giving me a chair. He took a chair like this. He was so afraid to be, so ideally, and you can work up to it, you don't want anything in between you and the audience. You're trying to create, especially with women, a relationship and a connection, and you don't want to hide behind anything. That's ideally.
Pardon?
Yeah. Yeah, if you need notes, though, too, you can put notes here, and you could be speaking, and then you could go back and refer to your notes, like I'm doing. It's totally fine. But ideally, you don't want to hide behind something. Yeah.
And also, don't be afraid, if you're speaking in another place, to change the setup.
Yeah.
One time they put me on a stage behind my set.
Yeah.
If it's okay with you, I'm going to move right here to be with everyone.
One of the first things I do when it's a podium and a microphone is I take the mic out, there's a cord, I take the mic out, and I walk out in front and talk. I go like Oprah, okay? So, or you ask for a lapel mic or a hand mic, all right? You really don't want to be stuck here. And there are times I go, and it's literally the microphone cord is taped down, and I'm like, I go ahead of time to see what the setup is. I go, please untape, we untape the cord, because I need to walk around. I'm telling you, it's much more fun. But again, you can work up to it. Use your space. Use your space, all right? Don't be frozen, okay? Either behind something or even without something, don't be frozen. Use the space around you. Right? Most people, they have this little box, and they move like this within the box, right? Okay, that's it, all right? And it really is, if they were talking for 45 minutes to an hour, it's boring. But when you move, you should use your space, but when you move, move for a reason. Move for a reason. It should be a good reason. For example, and you link it to what you're saying. I'll talk about what's the difference between our new year and their new year, all right? So January 1st, right? Happy New Year, okay? I'm going to quit smoking, take a course, be nicer to my parents, and lose 10 pounds, right? 1 year rolls along, right? What happened? I didn't do any of it. So what do? Next January 1st, Happy New Year, I'll try again. Right, Rosh Hashanah? You promise the same things. What do you have to do if 1 year later you didn't do it? You have to go before God, and you have to account. Accountability. That's the difference between our new year and their new year. And accountability is good. Accountability is great. Got it? You see how it works? Right? So don't be afraid, okay? Don't be afraid to move, and don't be afraid to use space, to use your space, to move around. It's much more interesting for you and for them and for you. Just to stand there, right? This is not what you want to do.
You move, I don't get nauseous when I see you moving. There are some people.
Right, some people are like this. Yeah, they go back and forth, literally, I can't watch them.
You're like one of the only people that move. Yeah. Like, I'm like, with I focus on what you're saying.
I know, there are people who rock, some speakers. There's really, I can't watch them either. It makes me nauseous.
I guess so. Some people are just like chuckling.
Yeah, yeah. Really, so there's something, ladies, called crutches. There's crutches. There are verbal crutches and there are physical crutches, and everybody when they start speaking has a crutch. And even if they've been speaking for years, they still have a crutch. So, and what I did was I took a course that they filmed me, Rabbi Eliezer Blatt, who will come to your city and he will train you. I'm telling you, Rabbi Eliezer Blatt will take you no matter where you're at, he'll take you to the next level. He'll take you from good to great. And he's excellent. And so I took out just like a one-day course. I was the first woman he ever trained. He had never trained a woman before. And he took me from here to there. And so he taught us about all the crutches, and he films you. So you don't even know you're doing it. So my crutch was, okay. I said, okay, okay. Like every few was, okay, okay. Like, so I don't even know I was saying it. So why do we have a crutch word? Yeah, uh-huh, right? Everybody. The crutch word is because you're afraid to pause between thoughts. You're afraid to hear empty space. Do not be afraid to have a pause. It's actually good. People are taking in what you just said. It's okay to pause. There was one time, I don't know if you've ever had it, at least I've never had it to you, when you're speaking, and you realize as you're speaking, I have no idea the next point. Like, I don't know what to say. Does that ever happen to you? You literally, like, you realize you've blanked out. And once I did it at an Asia Torah Partners Conference, and everybody was there. There was Shechiva, all the Rebbe and everything, and I was talking about women's mission, and I realized as I'm speaking, I forgot what I'm about the next point, and I paused. And then it came to me. And later, I remember one of the rabbis came up, they go, your dramatic pauses are so effective. They think it was a dramatic pause, and you forgot what you were about to say. All right? All right. So it's okay. It's okay. So, but you, other people, when you hear yourself or you tape yourself or have other people listen, don't use those crutch. The crutch words will make you nuts. Do you ever have a speaker like, okay, uh-huh, yes? It's like, yes, yes already. Okay, stop speaking. Right? So don't, so that's, and then we have physical crutches. So what are physical crutches? Like people who do this all the time, right? Or like this, you know, crutches. Men, it makes me nuts, right? If they're speaking on Shabbos, right? Or a speaker or the rabbi playing with their talis. They're doing the Superman thing, okay? They are, Monty Burke spins his kippah, you know, like, you know, okay? They touch their tie. They have physical crutches that they're doing. Again, they're playing with the television.
Beard.
It is beard. So, the beard. It is so distracting. Everybody's distracted. I didn't hear what you're saying because, like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? Okay, enough. Okay? All right, so they're just nervous crutches. Everybody has them. You have to break yourself of the crutches.
I've seen the shaito flip, too.
The shaito flip? Yeah. Oh, apparently a lot of people write in to H.com saying, like, that I do this, like, when
are
I see
serious?
It. And so Nehemi, Rabbi Cooper Smith, who runs H.com, he goes, I just want to tell you, a bunch of people have said this. So I said, so either I have to, like, brush it differently, or I need a new shaito. Sorry, honey.
Yeah.
It was a business expense.
Business expense. There you go. Yes.
Small group, and they're like, what do you think about sitting in the circle with them, or would you always recommend to stand?
You know what? Whatever works for you. Some people, I know Lisa loves the circle thing. I don't love the circle thing. I feel like we're in kindergarten. Okay, it's all good. Like, it's just not for me. But for Lisa, that's where she teaches best. For me, I've done a million things. I've done it around my dining room table where I'm sitting down. Ideally, I like to stand because I feel it gives me more energy and it helps me. But there are times where I've sat and I just, like most of my classes, I'm sitting at a table at Aish or at their house and I'm teaching around the table. But even if you're teaching at a table, you can be animated, right? Every once in a while, you can even stand up to make a point. You can do that. Even if you're stuck behind a podium, there are times that you can walk away, you could do this, all right? You know what Rebecca did. Rebecca, like, went out here, you see, and she was, like, talking to you, and then she went back, all right? So it was more interesting than just, okay.
Let's explain to the audience here that after Lori leaves the city, there's a bunch of Loris in the city who talk like her. And stuff, and she says, exactly. So this is why they do it. She teaches you how to be a piece of her.
It's so funny. Okay, okay, again, the more you do it, the better you become. Absolutely, absolutely. The more you do it, the better you become. I like to do it just to end. I always like to start strong. You start with something, like the Talmud says that you start with a joke. It disarms them. Like, you know, when I started talking, I told you about, like, Lori almost alive. It just is something to sort of break the tension. It clears the air when you start. I don't always start with something funny, but sometimes I do. But you want to start strong, so you want to start strong. But you also want to build, and you take them on a journey. Even my talk on soul in the afterlife, which is a very heavy talk, what happens after you die, there are times in the talk where everybody's laughing, and they're supposed to be laughing. That's the point where they're supposed to. In Mexico, it's hilarious. Lisa and I are speaking in Mexico, So there's a little bit of a language barrier. So we spoke so much. It's so nice to be able to speak fast again. So slow. And you're speaking slow. And you say something that usually gets a laugh. And there's like this delay because they didn't really get it. And you're talking. Then you go on to the next point. And about a minute later, they all start laughing. Okay. And then the next one, then they all talk to each other about it. As a speaker, you're like stopping and starting. But normally you don't. You take them on a journey. You can't be heavy all the time. And you can't be frivolous all the time. You make points, they laugh, you make another heavy point. You take them on a journey, and you're taking them somewhere. And you hold them by the hand through this journey. And you'll see how, again, think about speakers who you like. Like, what do they do? What draws you? And learn from that. Learn, and like, once you start speaking, especially when you take Rabbi Blatt's course, you become very critical of speakers. You see all this. He says some speakers are like the shooting duck, like the target. He goes like this. They go like this. They're just walking back and forth. And he goes, it's like the target, you know, at the carnival, okay? And he's got funny names for all these things. But it's classic stuff. And you see the people are making mistakes. You definitely want to, and again, you want stories, and it's good to end, like, you know how I ended the story with about, you know, the story about the guy, the husband who said, I've been waiting for you? That's a good ending story, okay? That's good. Oh, okay. And then, like, you make your point, so and then we had the film come up, like, we thought about it. What was I going to say? What was it going to end with? Right? Lights, film, Rebecca's up. Like, we thought about it, right? Like, give it some thought, how you're going to take them on this journey. And again, have your goal. By the end, they should get it. You've said it again and again in many different ways, in stories, in funny things, in sources, in personal stories. Like but know your goal. And by the end, they should get it. They should be able to walk away, and their friend would call them up and say, how was the talk? And they'll go, oh, it was really great. What did she say? They should be able to say, she said, doom, doom, doom. That was the point. Because sometimes you walk away from a talk, you're like, she was great. And your friend goes, well, what did she say? Oh, my gosh, it was so great. They go, but what did she say? Like, well, it's hard to explain. Either she wasn't there, or you weren't listening. You didn't get it. If you can't articulate what a person said, then you didn't get it. You want them to be able to walk away and to be able to easily articulate. She said, boom, boom, boom. That was the point. Yes?
So what happens when you're in the middle of speaking and everyone is engaged?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're trying to explain a concept, and then you see people that just like look like...
Right.
Like confused, like they didn't really get it, but you're right in the middle of a thought, so you're afraid if you stop and you try to reiterate it, it'll be repetitive. It's the people who already get the point.
Right. Okay, so listen, you have to be able to see a point in many different ways. If you see that people didn't get it, don't go on. Like, you want to, like, don't lose them. And sometimes you'll see, too, like, you'll see, like, you're not, it's getting boring because they're glancing at their watch. Or they glance at their watch, or they're fidgeting. You have to be able to watch them and see engage it. Because sometimes a talk that you thought was going to take an hour, you see that they don't have the, I'll have to tell you. So I was, it's so funny when you're a speaker, I don't know if it was Hans or Lisa, sometimes they'll tell you things before you go on. They're like, don't forget that like this, and don't ever do this. And then they're like, okay, good luck, right? And then you get on. So I remember this one, I was just in South Africa. And just before I went on, it was a bunch of college kids. And these kids, it's called Learn to Earn. And it's like the My Mom's Program, where they're paid, right, to learn. And I said, this is the first time, you know, that people didn't pay to hear me, like we paid you to hear me, okay? So they told me before I went on, Rabbi Willis said to me that we have thrown out all our classes. This next generation, for those of you who are on campus can relate to this next generation has stopped thinking. There's no more thinking. You cannot put a source in front of them. You cannot put a text in front of them. He goes, if you don't wow them in the first 4 minutes, they're texting. You've lost them. And they all have their phones, okay? So you have to. So that's what they said. I'm about to get up. They go, you have to wow them in the first 4 minutes. I'm like, okay. And I'm telling you, I was like, and one of my goals is that I'm sure you found this too. Sometimes you know the person who is in the audience who didn't want to be there, like their wife dragged them there, right? Because they're sitting there like this, not looking at you, with your arms crossed. This guy, okay? My goal in the class, in the talk, is to get him to uncover, to uncross his arms, because that means I'm closed. I'm not listening to you, right? Body language. And to get him to look at me. And I'm telling you, it's like the whole thing, I could see, like I'll say something, everybody laughs, and he's kind of like, like, he doesn't want to like me, okay? He does not want to like me, and my whole goal is to get him to like me. And you'll do that, you'll notice people. Sometimes you're speaking, and people are crying, because you're saying things that touch them very deeply, and you can't be distracted by it. You can't just stop and go, oh, it's okay. Like, you can't, okay? You have to go on, but you have to be aware. My husband taught me, and this is very hard, I know, so don't let this paralyze you. He says, Lori, when you're speaking, just assume that in this audience, everything's happening, right? Somebody's having an affair. Somebody's dying of cancer. Somebody's child is on drugs. Somebody's getting divorced. Everything is happening in that audience. Be aware of that when you're speaking. Now, if I was really cognizant of that, I wouldn't say a word. Like, you don't want to insult anybody, but you have to be aware when you're saying things, because I'll say certain things. I'll say, okay, in general, okay, and when I say, I look at, I make a statement about men and women. I go, so in general, men, and what does in general mean? There are exceptions. So I say this a lot because people are like, oh, well, my husband's not that. Or like, there are exceptions. But in general, this is the way men are, and in general, this is the way women are. So I do things to soften ideas, and I never used to do that. I just go, men are like this, and women are like this, and that's the way it is, all right? So you learn to say, and it seems to me, like you have to be able to soften certain ideas so people can hear it. So again, the more you do it, the better you'll become. Don't be afraid. What's the worst thing that can happen? Okay, well, not every talk, not every class is a blow-away winner thing. Some people don't like me. Some people walk away. They'll never come back to another class. But in general, you've got a great product, and you present it in a way that people enjoy it, that you enjoy. You're going to get, I always tell my students, really, this class is for me. I need to hear these ideas, and you get to listen, because I gain so much. I'm telling you, Hashem made it that I teach the 48 ways again and again and again and again. Why? Because it's so good for me. Because you, unless you're real with the material, and you're growing, and you're doing the exercises with them, then it's not good. Like, we're in this together. I've changed so much, and when I see the homework that I give them, and the exercises, and I see over the years what was, when my kids were little, what bothered me about this, and what I was concerned with, and what I'm working on, it's amazing how much I've changed and grown through this. And really, and Hashem, this is an opportunity. The Almighty doesn't need you. He doesn't need you to reach out to his children. He doesn't need you to do any of his mitzvahs. He doesn't need you to teach his Torah, right? He can do it all on his own. He can give the opportunity to somebody else. This is our opportunity. Take it. Okay, ladies, thank you.
Hey guys, we're going to do about a 10-minute break. That's long. Back here by 9:15. Questions and answers.
Oh, thank you. You're in Seattle.
Yes.
You want to come?
Thanks.
Not anyway, I'm trying to encourage anybody to leave, but if anybody has to go...